Motherhood is hard. One second, we think we're doing a good enough job, and the next, we feel like the worst mom on the planet, which is why we need the refreshing truth of the gospel to be repeated over and over, giving us hope in the everyday moments. So, Mama, whether you're sipping cold coffee or doing a sink full of dishes, we hope you'll find truth, encouragement, and laughter here. This is the Risen Motherhood Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, welcome back to another episode of Risen Motherhood. I'm Emily, here with my sister-in-law, Laura.
Hey, guys.
And we are really excited about this topic today because it's close to our hearts.
Oh, very close. Yeah, we're both big, big readers. You guys have probably noticed the exponential amount of books that we showcase on Instagram and on Facebook and on our resources page. And Emily and I have just been so influenced by books. So we're super excited to have an entire show all about books.
Yeah. And so one thing that we're starting to dabble in, remember again, my oldest is like five and a half-ish, and Laura's is four going on five. So we are just kind of starting into reading really good stories to our children and using those stories as a means to just pass along the gospel to them and to talk about godly character traits and to just use it as a jumping off point for conversation. And I feel like one of the most classic examples of that is Chronicles of Narnia.
Oh, it's the classic. Like, if you're going to start with a book, I think that's the first thing that comes to every mom's mind is, like, that's the more chapter, the first chapter book I want my kids to engage with.
Yeah, and we were just started the other day, which I realized I did a C.S. Lewis faux pas.
Major faux pas.
It started the series with The Magician's Nephew.
No, it's not what you do.
I just Googled it and saw, and then later I was like, oops, that was not right.
So for background, though, that's book one, and we started with, which makes logical sense. If you Google it, that's what happens. But common Lewis, I want to be like, what do you say when you identify with Lewis? But Lewis fan people will start with book two, which is The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, sort of the classic that stands alone. So
yes,
that's the backstory.
Yeah, so that's neither here nor there. But we were listening out loud to it the other day. I don't always sit and do real loud, but we do listen to audiobooks. And it was just so fun to kind of fill our house with this good story. And I actually found myself, as I was like walking past the table where they were coloring, listening to sections of the story, especially when Aslan, who is kind of the god figure in the story, is approached by Diggory, who has this sick mom. And he's feeling very, very sad and wonders if this lion will help him cure his mother. And he sees tears in Aslan's eyes and just realizes that Aslan cares more than he even does for his mother and his situation. And so here I am, just busy doing laundry, tearing up, thinking about how God is with us in our grief and in our sorrow, and having all of these biblical promises come to mind. And it was just a really good example of the way that these well-written stories can just trigger reminders of deep biblical truths for us and for our kids.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember always reading Anne of Green Gables growing up and literally wanting to be best friends with Anne. And I recently reread the books. I think there are three of them, but I reread them and I just fell in love with Anne all over again, and her zeal and zest for life, just her imagination, her ability to see God in so many things. And I especially remember as a young child really loving the way Anne included everyone, and she noticed people and she found value in all people, and just not necessarily understanding the depths of the meaning of that, but knowing that, like, I wanted to be like Anne. And there were a lot of biblical character traits that she was displaying that was written in story, so I didn't even understand all that I was taking in, but it was making actually a really profound impact on the way I lived my life and interacted on the playground or with kids at school and things like that. And so what we're kind of talking about today is just the power that story has to shape our children and to help them understand the gospel as a whole, but, and also different biblical character traits that we desire to instill in our young children, and how they just infiltrate our children in a way that's not obvious or not intrusive. So we're just going to chat through that today.
And exactly what Laura was saying, even just using books that maybe aren't overtly Christian, which is really cool. And we'll get into that more too, whether that's something like Winnie the Pooh, which is very straightforward to just talk through plot and character traits, or even there's like a lot of good moral stories out there, which of course in and of themselves, we aren't just going to teach our children, oh, just follow this, just behave. But as Laura said, it's a great jumping off point for discussion. And so What is really interesting about this and why we love stories so much is because God is the great storyteller.
Exactly. We love, like, looking back at creation, you can just even see that that God spoke the world into existence. And so words were at the very beginning of time. God used words to bring the world forth. And that just shows a great way how we can be image bearers of God every time we use words to talk about him, to share his gifts with our children, to share his creation with our children. Like, every time we speak, we read, we use words, we image God. And I love that. It's a communicable attribute of God that we can image.
Yeah. And actually, I just thought about this. I mean, if you're considering the way that God's story even went through his people for a long time before written words really went onto a page in a way that was easily transferable, what did each generation do? They had to tell the next generation the word of God through these kind of memorable narratives. And even if you look at the beautiful kind of poetic way that God spoke the creation story into existence, like, that was told that way for a reason, so that people could retell it over and over and over again and not lose that important aspect. And so also, I think we see that the whole Bible, we've talked about this in other episodes too, is this big meta-narrative, which is a word that means there's one story, there's one theme throughout, and that's the redemption story. But within that, there's also these small narratives. Maybe it's the story of the way that Israel was rescued from Egypt, or even smaller within that, maybe the way that the Israelites worshiped their golden calf instead of God. So there's all these miniature stories that all point to a greater story. He's just a great novelist.
Exactly. Well, and it's amazing to think about how God is the original, the ultimate storyteller. Like, stories, there's a reason we all love an epic and amazing story. There's a reason that we kind of can get caught up in a love story or in a warrior story or in a hero story. And I think that it's, like Emily was saying, we can see all these small stories in the Bible and just recognize that, I mean, think about how amazing it is that God wove them all together to create one story. And something that Tim Keller says, he talks about that it's important to note that the Bible isn't just a random collection of stories. It's united together under one plot line, the tension between God's justice and his grace. And it's all resolved in one thing, the person and work of Jesus. And I love that. I mean, that's, we love resolution in stories, right? That's because Jesus Christ is our resolution. Like, we image those things that we see in the Bible. Like, that's why we're caught up in the resolution to the Lord of the Rings trilogy, or I don't know what other stories were, were those epic big stories that we love getting to the end of.
And I think one of the coolest things, I mean, what is so fun to me when I get to the end of a well-written series is when you find that detail that was kind of the crux of the whole thing, and you realize, oh, that was mentioned back at the very beginning.
Yes, the foreshadowing.
Yes, and I had no idea what that meant until right now. And I think there's so much of that. Even if you look in Revelation, there's all these pieces that you go, oh, that was like back in Genesis, or that was in Exodus, or this happened during the prophets, or this happened when Jesus was here, and oh, and they didn't know that, but like, now we know. Look how it all wraps up together just perfectly, you know? Yeah. And he is just so, so good at that. And that's why we love that. And that's why our children love good stories as well, and why they can be engaged in stories in a meaningful way.
And another way we see story is just looking at the life of Jesus. We see that he taught his people through parables to shed fresh light on things that were hidden in scripture. And so a lot of the really famous stories that we all know that Jesus told are things like the Good Samaritan, the rich man and Lazarus, the laborers in the vineyard who were all paid the same, even though they worked those different amounts. So Jesus used story to drive home important points, to tell the same points he's already made in a different way. And so we can look at that too, of just seeing how story is so important.
And again, thinking about how memorable that is. I mean, sometimes we can't latch on to like a single verse, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I can quote that for exactly, but I can kind of retell that story of the Good Samaritan. And so again, as we are sharing good stories with our children, it sometimes can leave an impression and help their heart understand something that I think can be difficult with just technical language from time to time. And Jesus obviously utilized that technique too.
Yeah, the great thing about story is that anyone can understand them. So you can be very simple-minded mm-hmm. or you can be very childlike and understand a story. And so can an adult too. One thing I love about the Bible is it doesn't matter how much we learn about God, how much we study his word, there is always new truths uh-huh. to mine. And no one has ever reached or plumbed the depths of mm-hmm. God. And so that's something amazing about stories. Emily was saying it'll take these really complex truths and be simple enough for even a child to understand. And so that's just another, that's mm-hmm. just another argument for us using story to teach our children.
Yeah. So as we kind of move forward to some more practical things, I think first off, we just wanted to say, don't take this as another means of pressure in your right. life and another burden of like, oh no, another person reminded me that I didn't read to my children for 30 minutes minimum today. we know we all feel that, or you go to the pediatrician and they're like, just remember that you're supposed to be doing this. It's
uh-huh,
like,
okay.
I know. So we don't want you to feel like that. Laura and I understand that pressure, but we also want to just get you excited about this, just as we need reminders to be excited about this. And sometimes I will listen to like a good podcast or something. It just reminds me why I want to do it, why it is important, how it does make an impact. And so that is our heart as we're sharing this today, not to just
right.
add one more thing to your to-do list that yeah. you feel guilty about.
Yeah, literacy can get a little like, be a little, I don't know, kind of make you feel kind of guilty, as Emily yeah. was saying. So we don't want to bring that guilt. We're just bringing a friendly reminder and to get you excited about it. So we're sure that you guys are all thinking right now, okay, Lauren, Emily, you've got me re-inspired. What book should I start with? Well, we mentioned The Chronicles of Narnia. Yeah. Always a safe one. My four-year-old is loving it. So in terms of what other books that you could read, our suggestion is to look to wiser people than us who have compiled amazing lists. So on our mm-hmm. show notes, we are going to have a whole bunch of blogs where we get our book resources mm-hmm. from people who have degrees in literature and different things like that. So unfortunately, we are not going to get down to the practical of exactly what books to start mm-hmm. with, but we will list some of our favorites and our favorite places to find those books to start with over there.
Yeah, and I think it's not just Christian books, although there are a ton of wonderful books out there that are explicitly based on the gospel. But as we were saying, like, we have this book I've read to my older children, The Quilt Maker's Gift, and it's just a great example of this king who has all of these presents and things that he owns, and he's really, really miserable. And there's one thing he wants that he can't have, and it's this beautiful, rare quilt. And so the quilt maker says, well, I will make you one, basically, if you start giving away all of your gifts and you become humble of heart. And so he starts to give away all of his presents at first very resentfully. And then at the end, he's given away everything he has, and he's just kind of happy and in tattered clothing. And it's, of course, a more of a moral story, but it is a beautiful example and a great jumping off point for conversation to talk about, well, why was the king happier when he was giving away versus when he was receiving? Well, that's something we read about in scripture. It's more blessed to give than receive. And so, yeah, that's right.
You said it.
Did I say that right? Okay. So I think there's a lot of stories out there like that. And even actually stories that are not representative of biblical truths. Yeah. I think we have to be careful with how we introduce those and how age appropriate they are. But even talking about characters that are not kind or, right. hey, we've had the same thing. This is a different topic, but kind of like shows lately with my kids of, hey, why does mommy choose this one and not one that one? Why do you think? Like, what's in that that is good for your mind? What's in that that's not good for your mind? So early discernment is key.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that in any book, Christian or non-Christian, those truths will push themselves out on their own. I've always heard great books challenge people to wonder and then wonder why. So as Emily was talking about, like, oh, I wonder what it felt like to give away all of his stuff, and then, or why did he give away all of his stuff? And then what did he feel like after mm-hmm. he gave it all away? Or even things like, wow, look at that amazing bike that he built. I wonder how he did that. Or she was so brave. Where did she find the courage? So a lot of those things your children are already probably thinking, but you can help them along. It's a really simple question to say, wow, what do you think she felt when she did that? And those help your kids begin mm-hmm. to articulate the thoughts that are probably going on, but they don't really know how to make sense of them. But also know that Emily and I have had multiple conversations with our children where they completely change the subject, or they want, you know, a snack, yeah. or they want a TV show, or uh-huh. they're totally bored. So know that it's not this idyllic, like, we're just snuggling on the couch and there's like, we're talking about Jesus for 20 minutes. No, this is real life. And sometimes those moments happen and you better believe that we soak them up. Mm-hmm. But often, you know, it's just nuggets. It's just seeds all the time that we're planting, and we're going to capture those moments as we can. And know that most stories there are some really depraved stories. So I always feel like I need to say most, because there are some really bad stories we don't want to share with our children, but they are echoes of the greater story. They are echoes of God's word and his kingdom and his ultimate fulfillment, as we talked about, in Jesus Christ. And so those things, trust that they will stir in your child's heart, and that as you see moments, that you can tap into those and talk with them about it.
That's something that comes up a lot. And a question we get asked often at Risen Motherhood is, well, how do I have these gospel conversations with my children, or how do I train my children? And so this is one piece of that discipleship puzzle. Obviously, it's living out the gospel in front of our kids, but this stories element, where we can talk candidly and openly about things, even hard things. I think Trillia Newbell's God's Very Good Idea has like a lot of good talking points with our kids about differences that we see in people and how God made everyone in his image. And that's why we need to love everyone, and everyone has sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. And, you know, sometimes when I'm just telling my kids that over breakfast, maybe we're memorizing a catechism, it can come across kind of dry. But then suddenly when you open up this book and it's got pictures and there's things they can recognize and things that they think are interesting, it just totally opens up the conversation fresh again. So this is just another discipleship piece for building relationship with our kids.
Yeah. And with that, along with it, don't be afraid to stop in the middle of the book and help with comprehension. So exactly what Emily is saying, but essentially be like, oh, what's happening in the story? Can you tell me what's going on? And oftentimes I'll realize my son has a couple of the pieces, but I can help him put them all together, especially when we're talking about children that are so young. They're going to need that. Or like explain words and say, did you know what that meant? And if not, then you can help them. And a couple times, you better believe I'm looking on the dictionary on my phone. So, but also that's just an important piece with that too, of not just blazing through a book and not stopping at all, especially with these young children.
So. Yeah, and a word to moms of really little ones, whether they are 1 year old or 2 years old, and you feel like, oh, can I even make any impact? I have a lot of friends who started reading the Jesus Storybook Bible to their children when they were really young, like 1 and 2 years old. And by the time they were talking, they were like nearly remembering word for word, you know, a lot of the stories. And so even though it may seem like it's above your child's head, I still feel like it's a good habit. I remember an older, wiser mom told me one time, if nothing, do it so that you can start the habit of reading books with your children, even if you're not sure what they're comprehending. But often they are remembering a lot.
I would even challenge you guys with a baby. I know that when you have a 3-month-old at home, say you only have one child, we would read the Bible to our 3-month-old because they're laying there, you know, they're apt for it. And yes, I mean, it's completely over their head. Don't get me wrong. But those truths are soaking in. And we've shared on what's the show that we did?
Intentional from Day One or something like that.
Intentional Motherhood starts at Day One. We talked a lot about just really neat stories about children who had things that happened under the age of one that somehow show like ways that they kind of remembered something or were impacted by something, and how it just, your child is soaking things up even then. And so that was something where we read the Jesus Storybook Bible, then we switched to a little bit of an easier Bible, and then we came back to the Jesus Storybook Bible. So
Totally. It's just growing with your kids and being willing to try new things. And I feel like just experimenting too. If you feel like something's not working, I wanted kind of the idyllic read aloud experience with my kids, and for a long season was very frustrated and didn't read much to them because it didn't look that way. But then we got into, okay, no, we're going to all play Legos while we listen to this. We're going to draw. We're going to listen to a story during lunch, and we're going to be eating while we're listening. And it's been fun to try out different ways that our kids can still enjoy reading aloud while still being very busy.
Right. So a couple final notes also. Don't be afraid to repeat books. My mom read Pilgrim's Progress to my family every January. She would sit in the hallway where the bedrooms split, and she would read a couple chapters every night. And that is something that has become very special to our family. That book, they've now since gifted different copies to our children. And it's just really, really special. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking about the celestial city, thinking about the burden on my back, and having these images for sin, for eternity, for the journey of Christian going through life. Mm-hmm. And so those things, a lot of, even some of these more complex books, like just set up a time. Then you don't even have to find a new book. Mm-hmm. I mean, how great is that? It's like, great, we're going to read Pilgrim's Progress every January, whatever that may be. And a good tool to use is the liturgical calendar, which is just the church calendar. And we'll pop mm-hmm. that in the show notes too, so you can see how that looks.
Yeah, so I think just to sum up today that it is really a great opportunity to use stories, both Christian stories and maybe just kind of secular stories, to talk to our children about Jesus, to remind them of that big redemption story, and to get them excited about that for their own lives, and just help open up good conversations with them. So you can find more on our show notes at risenmotherhood.com, or also find us on social media discussing these things this week at Risen Motherhood on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.